Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans. And we are dipping our toes into the Salish Sea this week to learn more about ecological restoration efforts and the people involved. I'll be talking with Betsy Peabody, founder and executive director of the Puget Sound Restoration Fund, about her passion for the marine world and a few of the Restoration Fund's efforts. Plus, we will have part two of the story of the Pinto abalone, which we began during the last week of October. First, however, let's hear this week's mystery sound. So a small hint, that's a small sound that doesn't really reflect the character of the critter making it. So let me welcome Betsy Peabody. She's the founder and the executive director of the Puget Sound Restoration Fund. Based on Bainbridge Island, Betsy is an enthusiastic and very insightful leader of a key nonprofit whose goal is to restore abundant marine resources and our connections to them through a diverse portfolio of in-the-water projects throughout Puget Sound. And this coming Sunday, December the 13th, Betsy will be the speaker in the Port Townsend Marine Science Center's Future of the Oceans lecture series. Betsy's talk is titled Immersions in the World of Kelp. The Puget Sound Restoration Fund has been just steeped in kelp work for the past decade. And Betsy will delve into the results of investigations and research and development efforts that have been underway to restore kelp in the Salish Sea. I'll tell you how to view and listen to her presentation in just a few minutes. But first, welcome, Betsy, and I want to ask you a couple of questions. I know you were the founder of the Puget Sound Restoration Fund. I also read in some of your biographical information that you were not necessarily trained or educated originally in conservation science or marine biology. So I want to know, what inspired you to create the Puget Sound Restoration Fund? And then I want to know, what makes the Restoration Fund really so unique and so effective? I know it mostly through the partnership work with the Port Townsend Marine Science Center, and I'm really impressed. So tell me about how you did this.
Well, okay. I definitely took a very circuitous route into this particular work. So I'm not a trained scientist. However, I am in love with the marine world, and I always have been. And so I just found my own way into it. I thought I was going to study marine science and become a marine scientist, but really, I'm interested in the human connection to marine resources. And that's sort of where I dwell. And it's the reason that I wanted to start Puget Sound Restoration Fund. I had been working for a wonderful state agency, and I was coordinating outreach to a lot of communities around Puget Sound. But honestly, I wanted to roll up my sleeves and get in it myself. And I really wanted to focus in on marine habitats and species that were not only important in the ecosystem, but also iconic marine resources that humans have been connected to. So think Olympia oysters, native oysters, kelps, abalone.
Or the Pinto abalone.
Exactly.
Right.
They're all resources and species that humans have been connected to. They're part of our story. So I really wanted to concentrate on the nexus of those two things. And so I've been very lucky to collaborate with organizations and people in the Port Townsend area and in communities around Puget Sound, because all of it's done through collaboration. Mm. And so that's been a pleasure and happy to be talking to you.
I so regard your initiative and your sort of spirit and willing to do something that pushes forward on something very real. I was also really, when I was reading the mission statement of the Puget Sound Restoration Fund, I was really struck by that we're doing stuff in the water. We're doing things with critters and with habitats, and this is so very real. So tell me a little more about how you refined that mission and, again, more about the range of projects that are underway.
Okay. Getting back to the impetus for this and wanting to roll up my sleeves and keying off of what you just said, I really wanted to work with a group of scientists and work on restoration in the water, on the tide flats, in the hatchery, where it's happening, and really do a lot of R&D in terms of developing the practices, the methods for trying to recover different types of populations and habitats. And there's a lot of work in the kitchen. You got to figure a lot of things out step by step, and you have to kind of test it out in the real world and test it out with a lot of hands that are part of making it all happen. And so conducting those pilot scale efforts and then really collaborating with other entities and people to try to bring some of those restoration practices to scale. And we're at kind of different places in our trajectory, in the trajectory for our different projects. So we began with native oyster restoration. How do we do this thing in order to be effective? And then the next program that came online was pinto abalone recovery. How do we do that? The methods are different with that particular species. They have different sort of processes. They provide different functions in the marine system. And then from there, how do you recover kelp? There's so much that we don't know about these different species, and so much that we're learning, knowledge that we're developing along the way. So it's really kind of figuring out how to recover those things and move them forward and build that larger collective effort that's required to make sure that what we're doing in the water is well informed by science, and that it's doable to try to achieve recovery. We're setting our vision on the right things and building the resources to make that happen.
Wow. How many staff people do you have now? And how many, and I'm particularly interested in the depths of the scientists you have.
We have 16 people on staff now. And we have just a really wonderful, can-do, highly capable team. We have a couple of PhD scientists. We've got master scientists. We've got fisheries biologists, ecologists. We've got, you know, field scientists who absolutely know how to operate. They're almost aquatic organisms themselves. We've got people who are hatchery specialists. And then we also have people who love to do events, who excel at doing events and bringing people together, this whole community of people who have grown to support this work over the years. So it's not really just about, you know, doing work in the water and in the hatchery, but it's sort of building a community of people that is still connected to these resources and enjoying them through different kinds of feasting events, so that we understand truly that we're still supported by the foods of this place that can be gathered in these waters. So we've got a whole array of people, and then we get to work with people like you who are illuminating these stories, and with different people in Port Townsend who have partnered with us, not just on pinto abalone that you mentioned, but also on Olympia oysters and kelp. So it's all fair game in the world of recovery.
Betsy, in closing, how about a quick preview of your talk this Sunday about the wonderful world of kelp?
Okay. Well, kelp is magical in all kinds of ways, and I'm going to touch on four different things that we've been working on. And the first one is this five-year investigation that we did at Hood Head, north of the Hood Canal Bridge, to see whether or not seaweed cultivation could improve seawater conditions and also growing conditions for different kinds of calcifying species like oysters. And then secondly, I'm going to talk about some of the bull kelp R&D that I mentioned before, just the work that we're doing to try to develop a bull kelp restoration practice. And then thirdly, I'll talk a bit about initiating underwater ecological kelp surveys with some funding from NOAA. And there has never been a sound-wide series of index sites where people have been doing underwater surveys, ecological surveys. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get that started, and hopefully there will be others that want to adopt sites near them. And then finally, we're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about, a kelp expedition that we'll be leading in 2021 to take a fully immersive look into underwater kelp forests, where they still exist, where they don't exist, and what we all hopefully can do about it.
Wow, fascinating. Well, I know I've already registered, and I'm going to encourage listeners to go to the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website, and you'll see right on the homepage, you'll see information about Betsy's talk this coming Sunday, and you'll find a link there that you can use to register, sign up, and then that will get you the Zoom information that you need. And of course, I'm with Betsy today by Zoom because that's how we do business these days. So thank you so much, Betsy. And I'm really looking forward to your talk on Sunday.
Thank you, Nan. Thank you, Nora.
So now let's delve into one of the stories of restoration efforts in the Salish Sea, the story of the Pinto abalone. Listeners may have heard part one of this story on Nature Now during the last week of October and early November. If you missed part one, after today's program concludes, I encourage you to go to the KPTZ website and listen to the podcast of that program. Just search for Story of the Pinto Abalone. And as we learned in part one, the Puget Sound Restoration Fund played a really key partnership role with the Port Townsend Marine Science Center to learn enough to begin to restore a healthy Pinto Abalone population after it was decimated in the 1990s. The storytellers for part two are Allie Redmond, aquarium curator at the Marine Science Center, and Dana Africa, local marine biologist and scuba diver. In this pre-recorded interview, Allie takes us on a virtual tour of the Marine Science Center aquarium as she shares the work being done to recover the endangered Pinto abalone population. And then Dana Africa tells her story of being an abalone foster parent and an enthused advocate for all things marine. The interview was pre-recorded as part of the Marine Science Center's stewardship celebration this past October.
So now we're going, virtually that is, into the aquarium at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center with aquarium curator Allie Redmond. So, Allie, will you show us the adult abalone in the aquarium and then the juveniles in the conservation lab?
I am delighted to share them with you. So, as you can see, I am here in our aquarium, and I'm going to flip the camera around because much better than looking at me is looking at the abalone. So, here is the tank that we display our adult abalone in. You can see several along the back there. They do camouflage themselves very well to look like the rocks that are part of their rocky reef ecosystem. So I'm going to bring you along to the side because a rarer view of them in the wild is this view of their feet. I also like this because you can kind of see their faces as well. It's a humid day, so we have a lot of condensation. So excuse me while I rub a little towel here so we can get a clearer view.
Oh, that's great.
Look at them. And then you can kind of see the foot, and then you see the mouth a little bit right up there. You can see an eye stalk coming out. and you can see how it's moving around. And they're just amazing, beautiful creatures with a lot more personality than you would expect from a snail. Ah, there it is, opening its mouth.
Oh, yes. Cool.
Very cool. All right. Then I'm going to scan you over this way. You can see our other exhibits over here towards our conservation lab. And that is where we are headed next. So the conservation lab is where we really try to share empowering stories of current active conservation projects that are happening around the Salish Sea. And it just so happens that our favorite one is the pinto abalone that we're currently so delighted with. Here are our three pinto abalone tanks, very similar to the setup, as Betsy mentioned, to the how it looks at Puget Sound Restoration Fund, but on a much smaller scale. Each of these tanks holds a couple of hundred abalone. Some of these have 400 abalone in them each, which gives us the capacity for, around 800 to 1,000 abalone, depending on their size. And we'll go have a closer look at some of them. Color on this tank. This tank is tending to be a little bit more on the blue-teal side of things. Mm-hmm. And the colors, you really just have to see them in person. I encourage everybody who can to come in for a visit at some point and get to see the abalone in person, because that is how you really get to enjoy them.
So tell me, what do you do? How do you take care of them?
So like any babies, it's a lot of cleaning and feeding. We already did our round of cleaning this morning, but I was just about to add some more food. So I'll show you guys that process. So it's been found that the healthiest food for the little ones is a red algae that we call dulse. But this is a big bite. So just like with a lot of babies, we blend it up and make a smoothie. So this is just that same dulse all blended up. And then we just try and make sure it's well distributed around the tank so that everybody has easy access to food.
Cool. So Allie, in the past, you and I have talked about the fact that the conservation lab it's more than just about taking care of and raising abalone. Can you share the vision the Port Townsend Marine Science Center has for raising awareness about the plight of the pinto abalone through your strengths, interpretation, outreach, education?
Yeah, I'm very excited about what has been happening and what is going to be happening moving forward with the abalone. The taking care of them is fairly simple, but it's really time consuming. And so I think an area that we really provide extra value to the project is that during this long period of taking care of them until they're a nice size for release, is that we're sharing the project with the public. We're letting people hear about this specific project, about the concept of conservation, and letting them know that there really are things that we can do, things we can do to make it the world a better place, to support our Salish Sea and all the other really important ecosystems and the worldwide ecosystem. So we are currently working on expanding our exhibits here in the aquarium, also on expanding education programming and outreaching, and creating a traveling exhibit that we'll be able to share with our other interpretation and education partners, so we can really bring the outreach story to the entire region. And so very, very fun and exciting stuff coming, and would love to be able to increase the program even further in future years.
That's great. Thanks, Allie. It's such fun to kind of be with you in the aquarium, even if we are virtual. And, you know, it's a fun tour, and you are such a strong force for conscientious stewardship and for making the wonders of the Salish Sea, well, visible, understanding, and just compelling.
Oh,
thanks again, Allie.
Thanks.
So our last storyteller is Dana Africa. Dana is more than a volunteer citizen scientist with the Abalone Project. She's a marine scientist with many years in the field an enthusiastic scuba diver, a passionate lover of mollusks, and a dedicated abalone foster parent. So welcome, Dana. I want you to tell us just a little bit about how your passion for the marine world just blossomed and grew.
Well, let me see. I was born to the water. Crossed the equator when I was 5 on a sailing ship and have been in, on, or near the ocean ever since. So,
boy, it is part of you, isn't it?
It is very much a part of me. Yes.
So, about mollusks that makes you especially passionate?
I took a biology course at the University of Oregon. I was working as an RN. I went in to bump up my license and had to take a biology class. And the professor was so outrageously good that I just took a turn, a big one, and I went the other way. I went straight into biology. the amazing volume of invertebrate life is what got me going.
And what about mollusks particularly?
In mollusks in particular, at 2 of my classes, I had to take vertebrate and invertebrate biology. And I thought I'd love vertebrate because it's the big stuff, you know,
yeah,
what everybody loves. But when I started tide pooling and collecting samples, I couldn't believe the volume of invertebrate life. And mollusks in particular are so essential to keeping the environment clean. They're grazers. They pick up the debris. They're absolutely essential.
And there's such a variety of them, you know, snails, clams, abalones, oysters, nudibranchs, octopus, squid. That's amazing. So let's talk now about abalone for a minute. Tell me about your passion for the abalone.
Well, it kind of started when I was a much younger person. I think I was driving up the coast of California on my way to Washington, and I passed a farmhouse along the side of the road, and on the side of their garage were nailed about 100 full-size abalone shells. At my young age, I looked at it and I said, oh, well, that's pretty. But then as I thought more and more about it, I realized how horribly criminal that was. And so then, here's the picture. I was taking a picture of a diving in Oregon off the coast. I was in about 30 feet of water. I had less than 2 feet of visibility, and there was a surge. So I put my arm up and propped it on a nearby rock to stabilize my body so that I could shoot this incredible little shot. And it moved.
The rock.
The rock moved. I went a little startled, and I looked over, and there was a little abalone, a little pinto abalone. He said, get off my shell.
So is that the very same abalone we see in that photograph?
That is the very same. I got one shot of the nudibranch sitting on the line chitin, and then my elbow moved, and that was the next shot I took.
Wow. Yeah. Tell us about what you like best about being part of the Pinto Abalone Restoration Project.
The best part is I think I've really embraced the importance of them, of mollusks in general, but abalone in particular. They do so much to make our ocean clean and available for everybody to live better.
So let me carry on with that thought. Will you paint a picture for me in words describing how you imagine that healthy rocky reef ecosystems with thriving wild populations of Pinto abalone?
I see huge, healthy bull kelp forests letting light through to a bottom rocky reef that is covered with all the little cleaners, the limpets and the chitons and the abalone, and they're keeping it all neat and tidy for this picture you see down below that is what a typically healthy bottom looks like. It's covered with invertebrates. And then there's the clams and the oysters and the mussels and the barnacles that are cleaning the water. So you have a clear green ocean surrounding you because it's so full of nutrient. That's a beautiful picture.
That is beautiful. We'll hold that image. So thank you so much, Dana. Your excitement and love for the marine world is just so infectious. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Well, and thanks to all our storytellers, Josh Bauma, Betsy Carlson, Ali Redman, and Dani Africa.
Well, do check out the Port Townsend Marine Science Center's website for more information, photos, and videos about the Pinto abalone, and to register for Betsy Peacock's talk on Sunday, December the 13th. So now let's hear that mystery sound again. Probably not a big surprise to many of you. That high-pitched whistle or whinny was the call of the bald eagle. And some of you may also know that in old Hollywood Westerns, when they had the iconic eagle flying over the mountains, Hollywood decided that the real call of the eagle was just way too wimpy. And instead, what you see is you will see the eagle flying, and the noise it's making is actually the call of the red-tailed hawk. And as a comment, I feel really blessed to live in an area where nearly every day that I go outside, if I only look around, I very likely will see bald eagles. So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. Nature Now airs here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 12:30, and most Thursdays in the 5 p.m. hour following the community news and calendar. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening. And our closing music today is Kelp Forest Dancing. It's a lovely little kids song by Birdsong and the Eco Wonders.
Have you ever seen a forest dancing like a kelp forest dances in the sea? Moving to the rhythm of the ocean, a fancy dancing forest of seaweed. Slow dance and sway into the rhythm, hold fast to the bottom and reach for the sun. Slow kelp dance and sway into the rhythm, hold fast to the bottom and reach for the sun.
Looks like you do too.